I went down to the river to watch the fish swim by. But I got to the river so lonesome I wanted to die, oh Lord. And then I jumped in the river, but the doggone river was dry. She's long gone, and now I'm lonesome blue.
Hello, and welcome to SSG Today, a long gone podcast. This is going to be episode 3. Those of you who have picked up on the new plan with the Out of the Park Baseball League and SSG in general, the idea that I'm kind of settling upon is to try to put out at least one podcast a week covering, we'll start with mainly the Out of the Park Baseball League, eventually and potentially the second Out of the Park Baseball League, and then the vision is to potentially farther on into the future, perhaps cover some of the other goings on and other games and other societies within the SSG community. So we've started to go around the horn, and for any of our GMs listening to these, I'm definitely looking to line up more guest GMs to come in. We had Paul from the Red Sox come in and talk about top five catchers in the SSG League, both at the major league level and the prospects. And today, very thankful to have Phil. So our second World Series participating GM from the Colorado Rockies. And he is going to be with me talking about first baseman today. Phil, how's it going?
Good.
Good.
Back in the middle of winter and huddled down here. Hey, by the way, every time I listen to your podcast, that song is in my head.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know if that's good or bad. I'm I've already a few different times in these podcasts I talked about the inspiration as sort of this baseball movie called Long Gone, and at one point in the movie, the main character, they're on like a bus traveling from one city to another. It's kind of a minor league baseball movie, and he's singing this song, and that's kind of where it comes from. And it does get in your head a little bit.
still haven't seen the movie, but I will.
I recommend it, but I'm always afraid. Go ahead.
I didn't know if it was part of the movie or just something.
Yeah, it is. But I'm afraid a little bit of overhyping it because it's a really solid, good baseball movie, but I don't want people going into it and thinking it's, the Natural or something like that. Although everybody has their own taste. Some people I've actually talked to don't like The Natural. I don't know how, but So you mentioned before as we were chatting that you had a chance to listen to the catcher episode that I did with Paul. I thought maybe I'd first just give you an opportunity I actually have a name that I need to mention, but did we miss anybody that you were thinking, what are these guys talking about? Or is there any comments on that episode? I'll give you a chance first.
The catchers. I wanted to thank you for the shout out to my players in your rookie list. I didn't think of them as top five, but it felt good to hear you mention them. the catchers were right. I think I would have picked those. I mean, it was interesting to listen to. Yeah. I always wonder how much, and we talk about this a lot, the game engine. I always wonder how much catching defense affects the game. I know I just traded away Jesus Mejia, and he was my backup pretty much. But his defense was great, but I didn't really see, it's a small window, but I didn't really see an incredible amount of difference between him and my other catcher, Murphy. Are they handling I wonder how it affects handling the pitchers. Does that have something to do with my pitching woes other than playing on the moon. and of course, so catching would have been difficult. And you can see how many runners they throw out. I think that would have been a difficult one to do, but I liked what we came up with.
Yeah, you do wonder. And it's kind of one of those, you would assume that it has some kind of positive impact, but exactly in what way? And I mean, I know Paul was saying he really places a premium on defense in evaluating catchers, and he talks about his kind of mystical spreadsheet. He has sort of his formulas and that, but he was saying that's defense he really puts a premium on. I do think it's important at the catching position for sure. How exactly it is important though is, but we had intended Paul and I to go over a couple of snubs, and I think we kind of got off and just didn't have a lot of time left. But I did, in thinking back over it, I did want to mention one guy that Dan Combs of the White Sox. I mean, he was probably the most prominent snub that, looking back on it, that I wanted to make sure and give the White Sox a little bit of a shout there, because, I mean, that guy had a really good year last year and has a lot to like about his game. But on each of our top five lists, he didn't quite make it. I think the defense was a little bit of a factor. And for me, this will kind of take us into our first baseman, because I'm interested in kind of what your process was. But for me, and I talked about this a little bit with the catchers, I'm kind of trying to project a little bit. That's why, for example, I mean, I had a guy like Turnbull in my top five catchers, and because the way I'm looking at these lists is that not necessarily trying to rank the top five seasons of 2020 or the top five first baseman, for example, today, the top five first baseman of the past 2 to 3 years in the league. I'm kind of looking at, okay, well, 2021, I mean, who am I projecting as going to be the top first baseman? So that's kind of factored into my thinking a little bit. And even today with sort of like my top two, the deciding factor of kind of vaulting them over some of the other guys for me was just like their age and feeling like they're actually still a little bit short of their prime, yet they've already been putting up great numbers. So what's been kind of your process, or what did you value most as you put together your first baseman list that we're about to look at?
Well, I found it hard. One of the things that affects it is us, our league, going to the universal DH, and how many of these players are going to be more DH-like in the National League. My list is very weighted towards the National League, not just because my team is there, but you look at the first baseman in the National League, they've played 159, 155 games at first base, whereas and we talked about Miguel Cabrera and how you can't have him on there because he doesn't play there very often. We talked about one of the other guys we're going to mention who played maybe half a season there. So right off the bat, it was hard to just sort of nail people down in my head as first baseman next year. I mean, I have my own guy, Rowdy Tellez. He's pretty decent defensively, but now that we have the DH, how many games am I going to have him at first? So, when I went through this, I don't think I have a spreadsheet or anything, numbers like Paul. I sorted them so many different ways, and the same names keep popping up. It almost got to be a gut feeling after a while.
Sure. Well,
you mentioned when you guys did the catchers, that catcher, short, center fielder, you put a pretty high premium on defense. First base is almost the opposite. You sacrifice some defense for power at that position. So, defense went into one of my picks pretty solidly, but it's it's interesting how each one of these positions that you do, you're going to have to sort of look at a player in a different way. So
yeah,
I guess you look at a lot. I looked a lot at, you know, their power, somewhat at their defense, but how many games they played there. So yeah, it wasn't I don't have a hardcore system.
Yeah.
But you just sort it so many different ways that eventually you start to get a feel.
Yeah.
Certainly a couple got bumped off the list, but for the most part, the same five or six guys get bumped off.
I think that, yeah, I mean, traditionally, you think back throughout the history of baseball, I mean, your first baseman, yeah, I mean, you kind of, those are your run producers. Those are kind of quite often your big boppers. You don't value defense as much there of, now, I mean, then there's been some evolution in the game as well where, you know, kind of defense at every position has become, I think, in some ways valuable. And then you look at when you do have a really quality, good defensive first baseman, the kind of the difference that a guy like that can make. I know in real life, just following the Cardinals, they had traded for Paul Goldschmidt. And there was, you know, it was a huge story within the St. Louis kind of fandom about how much better of a first baseman he was than the guys had been playing there the past couple of years, and how he's made the entire infield much better, just through handling of throws and things like that. And so it's kind of like I kind of feel like you don't necessarily need to have a quality defensive first baseman, but if all things are equal, or even if the offense is close, then the defense is still important. I mean, just almost like any position. So,
first base is one of the positions where, unless you're watching a real game, it's kind of hard to see their effect.
Yeah.
Defensively, like in shortstop, you can see the huge range. At third base, you can see the big arm. But I just let go of a guy I had for the entire time, and the 5 years, 6 years we've been in SSC, I had Justin Smoak strictly as he was a switch hitter and a good defensive first baseman.
Yeah.
So, how much effect did that have? I guess I'll find out.
Yeah. This year. Justin Smoak recently signed by the Cubs. I saw in the.
Right. I couldn't remember what tier it was.
Yeah. Okay, well, I tell you, let's go ahead and get to our list, and I'll actually start with my number five, which is a guy you might have a thing or two to say about. You already mentioned his name, but my number five first baseman was Rowdy Tellez of the Rockies, and I should have already had his. I'm working from Stats Plus here as we record. But I think, you know, when you look at, like we were just talking about the big time power, I mean, that's Tellez for me. That was the big thing that stood out. I mean, 42 homers last year, over 100 RBIs. You don't worry so much about the batting average because, I mean, 350 on base is pretty good for a slugging first baseman. 239 is the average, but I mean, 147 WRC plus. You look at, you know, a 4 WAR first baseman with 40 homers.
One of the reasons I think I have him just outside, and this is again my fault being the manager. He did that in 500 at bats. I figured it out because he's my player. He has the same amount of the bats for home run as Miguel Franco. If you look, he only played 112. So my Justin Smoak platoon for defense and against lefties.
Yeah.
I think maybe I'll let him go this year. So it'll be interesting to see when he comes up with a full season. Knock on wood, hope he doesn't get hurt. But those numbers are with 200 less at bats than most of the people ahead of him. So
yeah.
I kept him out for two reasons. One, for that. Two, it's hard for me to – it's kind of hard to pick your own players.
Yeah.
But, he's – I like to joke about trading away a Cy Young Award winner in Steven Matz. But we got Tellez in that deal, so that worked out good.
Yeah. You're number five?
Oh, yeah. Well, we were talking about this before. I'll stay with Devers. I almost like honorable mention for Anthony Rizzo. I almost had Rizzo at five, but I had a question because Devers only played 79 or 80 games at first base. So one of the discussions we had before we came on was, should there be a line? How many games do you see somebody needing to play before they qualify as somebody at that position? So, and this is what I was talking about before. I think Paul DH'd him a lot. And so that's going to happen to us here in the National League now. So how many games is someone going to need to play to qualify as a first baseman? Now, are you going to have a podcast on DH?
I wasn't planning on it because you have the whole half, you have half of the league who did not have a DH last year, right? And then I think there's also going to be a number of teams who will kind of take more of a DH by committee approach. I guess some teams do that with certain positions as well. You might have a platoon at a certain position or whatever, but it's not as common as I think it'll be at DH. So maybe we'll kind of try to sneak in a quick DH discussion with one of the other ones, maybe one of the outfield positions. But yeah, it is kind of an oddity. And like with Devers, like you said, he is on my list. I won't reveal quite yet, but I don't know. If I had to go back and rethink it, as we were talking before, there is that consideration as to does he belong in that? Should that be a consideration in the ranking as in terms of with him only playing about half a season of games there? And I went ahead and had him in, and obviously you have him at number five, but I went ahead and had him in because he is listed as a first baseman. His positional rating is better. I don't know if Paul plans to continue to kind of split his time there between there and DH again this year, but at least for purposes of this list, we're going to leave him in as a first baseman. But it's an interesting question for GMs out there listening, and you know, some feedback. Are we interested to hear anyone else's opinion? So this navigating through Stats Plus is not as easy as it was. So my number four, I'll go ahead too, is Brandon Belt. And his was a situation where I did factor in a little bit the defensive side. Like you mentioned Rizzo. I mean, Rizzo is also a good defender. His 2020 was a little bit down from his 2019, and with his age, my thinking there was that perhaps there's a little bit of a career downturn, but we'll have to wait and see what happens this year. That's Rizzo, by the way. I'm now in Belt. 32 years old and just coming off pretty, any way you look at it, pretty nice season. At 282, 378, which I mean, that stands out, 520 on the slash line, 28 homers, 151 WRC plus. Hits left-handers, actually, this was something I looked at with him, is that his batting average against left-handed pitchers was .306. So, and much less at bats because, you know, you generally face less left-handed pitching anyway. But the fact that he really doesn't you don't have an advantage against him when you're throwing a left-hander was another factor for me in terms of just being an everyday stalwart type of guy. And, you know, you mentioned, we were just talking about games, 135 games at first base last year. So Brandon Belt was my number four.
Also my number four. And he's one of the guys that going into it I didn't think about, but he just kept popping up everywhere, no matter how you sort it. When you look at defense,
not going to rate it too much. Boy, a 70 defensive rating for his last three seasons, if you look, are all hundred RBIs a couple weeks ago, a couple years ago. So yeah, he. I was just looking through the Toronto's page. I was just looking through Toronto's lineups, and I don't know if it's just he was messing with it in the offseason, but Brandon Belt was leading off in one of his lineups.
I hadn't noticed that, although with a guy with a .380 on base percentage, it wouldn't be the worst idea in the world to have him lead off. And I know they have some other power bats in Toronto, that could still hit behind him. So that, like you said, maybe he's just tinkering with some things on his team lineup page. But that's a good question. I don't know. So you had Belt at number four as well, and we should probably say that. Our first base list actually did end up with a lot of the same names, so we have a few more differences on the prospect list. But if anybody could hear for just a moment there, there's some construction out the window, so I'm not sure if the recording was picking that up, but I kind of moved to a different part of the room away from the window, and so if you heard any of that, hopefully the sound is a bit better now. Okay, so.
Noises and language.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep that in mind. So we each had Belt at number four. I'll go to my number three, and I keep forgetting to get my stat page up. But Jim Cobb of the Phillies now. This is a case where I kind of, and a little bit with Telez as well, that you overlook the defense a little bit. The defense doesn't stand out, but the prototypical first base power numbers do. I mean, 45 homers, 100 RBIs, 258, 334, 580, just kind of your big bopper first baseman type, 4.2 on the WAR, and just kills lefties, really destroys left-handed pitching in about only half the at-bats. He hit 14 homers against left-handed pitching in 2020, and just a guy that is still on the up and up. I mean, he's 27 years old as well, which was definitely, usually you think of right around 27 is the time when a lot of big leaguers hit their prime. Now, I haven't crunched the SSG numbers to see if that is about the same and over the history of the SSG league. That would take probably a pretty large amount of work to put that together, but so Jim Cobb, number three for me.
I had a number three for all the same reasons.
Yeah,
can't overlook those numbers. Other than Miguel Cabrera, who we took off because he only played 14 games, no one had, I don't think, more home runs at that position.
Yeah. Why don't you? So I've kind of I've had first word on a few of these guys because we have a lot of the same guys. Why don't you go ahead and give your number two first for your number two guy?
My number two, which I think you said you don't have on your list, but I really this is good news for you, I guess. But I really like Dominic Smith. we talk about first base and how you might give up some defense, but his defense I thought was so good. And he played almost, you know, 150. I think he played almost 159 games.
Yeah.
So while his numbers, offensive numbers might not pop out, I mean, the WAR is still 5.4. He even stole seven bases, but and he's a lefty. I like that. But yeah, the defense, let's see if I can, just looking at some of the stats, he, let's see, yeah, wow, so he got a zone rating of 8.8, his range 9.32. And to play all those games and only have five errors, I thought was incredible. And you know, he had the most total chances also, so it wasn't like he was hiding. He was a part of 155 double plays. I mean, I know as a first baseman, that doesn't mean that much, but I mean, I just thought his defense was so good that I put him in the list. I like his, and even though his offensive numbers don't pop, I do like his rankings or his ratings, at least my scout does. And sure. Yeah, so I'm not that excited that he's in my division now, but I had him up there at number two. Mostly on defense.
I think I probably suffered, or he suffered at least with my list. Kind of from one of the same things you mentioned, you shy away a little bit from your own guy unless you're just completely sure he belongs. And I mean, yeah, there is a lot to like. I mean, he was really, really, when I started the off season, and then started talking a little bit with the Cubs and they were making him available. I mean, he was really a huge target. I mean, a guy that, I mean, I think I was probably a little bit of a annoyance to our Chicago Cubs GM because he was willing to talk about him, and so I just kind of kept at it until I was able to work a deal out, because just a really nice bat. You mentioned the defense. You know, a lot to like about Dominic Smith. I think the WAR is actually higher than some of these guys we've mentioned, but that's, as you also pointed out, that's largely due to the defense, but certainly a nice bat as well. So, so my number two, move Dominic Smith at two. My number two, and you already had this gentleman, but Devers, and we don't need to go back over the kind of the question of how much he DH'd, and we kind of covered that. But his number two, the reason he was number two for me, it comes back to kind of a projection. When you look at a guy who's just, you know, he's 24 years old and has already put together the type of offensive production that he has, that's kind of, you know, you kind of look ahead into things. I mean, at age 22 in 2019, he has a 100 RBI season, 26 homers. I mean, last year, top 27, 75 RBIs, 402 on base. So just kind of a guy that you feel like is potentially on the verge of being one of the more dominant bats in our league, being only 24. So I'm just projecting a little bit. I'm feeling like he may have yet another step up that he can even make. I mean, our scouting has him even able to progress in a couple of the areas. So Devers is number two for us.
I just noticed he might have, did he have an injury of some sort? He only played 112 games. So those numbers probably do project.
You know, you're right, 112, and that also answers our – so, if, I mean, if you only played in 112 and yet played in, what, 79 as a first baseman, that's a little bit better.
I don't know why I didn't see that, come to think of it. So now, yeah, I feel much better about that.
Well, you know, I actually hadn't noticed that either, but you're right. I mean, those numbers I just went through were, you know, in 415 at-bats, so he probably had – Yeah, he had a fractured thumb.
More homers than the year before.
It actually looks like he missed. He had two separate injuries. He had a fractured ulna, 5 to 6 weeks, and then he also had a missed 3 weeks with a fractured thumb. So wow, I mean.
Well, that might have put him up above my five on my list, but that myself, so maybe our. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's see. Where I think what are we've made it to your number one, right? Go ahead.
That was easy. He'd have probably been my number one before I even started looking at things because I've had personal. he's killed me. Jonas Lantigua for San Diego. I just remember the beginning of the year 2 years ago. I think we started out playing him. But yeah, I mean, he had the highest WAR. He's incredibly defensively. 110 RBIs, 38 home runs. Only 26. I mean, even if you just look at his rankings, 70 power, 75 defense. I mean, that you can't get. I thought he was a clear number one, and as I sorted and went through stuff, I just sort of got the game.
Well, it's the same for us. I mean, I don't have some of the exact same history of going back a couple years of seeing him in the West, but everything stood out. The age, you know, kind of I've already talked about the factor of a guy that is entering his prime, but yet, even though he may still have his prime years ahead, he's still already put up just ridiculous numbers. I mean, as a rookie, I just realized as a rookie, he had 46 homers.
Yeah, that was the year I was talking about. That was just ridiculous.
Yeah. And then, I mean, this past season was just like you said, 6.6 WAR. I think that led all first basemen. And I think, pretty clear-cut choice for me as well, and so Jonas Lantigua is the number one first baseman by both of our estimations, at least. So a quick I was not typing yours in, so I'm going to ask you to run through yours again, just the names real quick. But mine, Rowdy Tellez at 5, Cobb, Belt at 4, Jim Cobb at 3, Devers at 2, and Lantigua at 1. And your top 5 were?
Devers at 5. I also had Belt 4 and Cobb 3. Dominic Smith at 2 and Lantigua at 1.
Great. We'll switch over to our prospects. And this is, I mean, with the catching evaluation too, this was a tougher exercise, and I think we talked a little bit before, and you agreed. It's just first of all, kind of a larger pool, and then how much are you looking at their minor league numbers versus, the projections? Because, you know, we're talking about prospects, so projections should be a big part of that. So I think in talking before, we actually had I want to say just two names that are the same. So a little variation here. My first, and while I my number 5, and it might take me a second to get up his stats, but my number 5 is from the Brewers organization, Cliff Randall. And if you look at, sort of at OSA, he is a little bit down the rankings list, and still haven't found him. But I know that the thing that stood out for me with him was that he was one of the, I think, only two guys, and the other one is on my list as well, but who my scout is giving a 75 power tool projection to. And, when as a first baseman, it just stood out to me as a guy that, you know, I feel like is destined for big time power in the league. Still trying to bring him up.
He's one of only two that has a 75 power rating in my scout as well.
Okay.
That what turned me off a little bit was the contact and the eye were a little low, but yeah, 75 pops out.
Yeah. So yeah, I still, because he's navigating the stats plus is giving me a little trouble at the moment. So I don't have, I may come back with some additional stats on him that put, that had me put him at number five, but for now I'll stick with just the 75 power projection tool as being a bit, was the big factor for me on putting Cliff Randall at five. So you're number five?
My five was actually, he's the only first baseman in the top 100 on the prospect pipeline. I'm not sure why he's not, he, at 23, he's still in rookie ball. So he was just so high up there. I have him at my number five. Can't be too long before he comes on up. I mean, if you look at his rankings, but I mean, obviously reasons. His potential rankings are pretty big. We talked about this before we started. Also, at 23 years old, he's don't know why he's not there yet, or closer. But just based on where he is in the, as a the ranked 29th in prospects, and based on the potential bars, I just snuck him in my list. I mean, he's so far up there, I haven't put him at five. He's in the Oakland organization and they're looking for him.
Yeah. Yeah, we he did. Says, go ahead.
He says, you know, they, on the prospect pipeline, it gives you the ETA, like when they should show up in majors. And it says 2022. So I don't know. He's going to hit his first soon. Okay?
Yeah, it's an interesting case. We talked about it a little bit before recording. I do not have Bowers on my list from Oakland. And. We kind of looked at him a little bit, and I think, yeah, the fact that he's 23 and in rookie ball was a bit of an oddity. I didn't want to necessarily just go by OSA. So when I looked at him, the stats that he's put up so far, and kind of the current tool ratings at the age of 23 were a little lower than I would have liked. But I mean, Phil, you said it. If you look at, I mean, your scout probably very similar, but the potential bars for him, I mean, if he were to reach that maturity, reach those potentials, it is pretty impressive. I mean, down the line, at every on every major tool. So I think it'd be an interesting guy to watch to see if he fulfills that, because I mean, like you said, he is the only top 100. First baseman, according to OSA. So, all right. So those are our fives. My number four is Danny Badger from the Diamondbacks organization. And here we go. So, 20-year-old, and he. This past season, split some time between the Carolina and the Midwest League, but most of his at bats were at the Midwest League, 275, 10 homers. But then actually, he actually went over three levels. So, New York Penn, he hit 13, 10 more. I'm talking about home runs, 10 more in the Midwest League, and then another five. So over 20 homers across three different levels, it seems like the Diamondbacks were moving him pretty aggressively, which kind of tells you a little bit about what they think of him. He's already developed pretty nicely with his contact gap and power. The eye and the avoiding Ks is lacking a little bit behind his potentials, but I guess you would kind of expect that for a younger hitter. and those will develop. Not great defensively, but he's a guy that just seems like a projection of a solid first baseman that could be more than likely an everyday guy in 2 or 3 years from now, maybe four years, and probably fashion a nice career, just solid kind of ratings and numbers down the line. So
does it say he played a game at the major league level?
Yeah, I do have that. Yeah, so he actually must have gotten a late. To, I guess he's on their 40 already. Yeah, 4 at bats in a major league game. I've got that here too.
Or did he get him? That's with Cleveland. He got him in a trade.
Oh, was that with Cleveland?
That what it says.
I'm not seeing that, but it could have been, and I wonder if that may have been a guy picked up in a trade. Yeah, it was with Cleveland. You're right.
Another sort of conversation topic we mentioned before, one of the things that kept Badger off my list was the 40 defense, but one thing that the game doesn't do is give you a projection of their defense. It says 40 and it turned me off, but will that improve? And you never really, the game doesn't give you any indication or ceiling. I like the other categories of how much they improve at first.
Yeah, you know, that was a great point that you made. We were chatting before recording, because I honestly had never really given that much thought, as you do when you're evaluating a player. You certainly look at those potentials on the, your contact, gap, power, eye, and avoid Ks, and the same thing for your pitching staff with the pitch ratings. But yeah, they don't really give you that ceiling on the, like, your range and your range error and arm for your defensive ratings, and even just like the positional rating. So it is kind of a,
and that kind of segues to my number four. One of the reasons I have Jim Smith for the Tigers, another 23-year-old. Again, it says he'll be here this year, but he's an A ball. He had one of the higher current defensive ratings at first for me. So, and he's real consistent across the board with his ratings. Decent stats. He had 3.3 WAR, but I don't know if that was over. I don't know what levels he's jumped. 13 home runs, 76 RBI. So, I had Jim Smith as my number four for the Tigers.
And I did not have Jim Smith on my list, but looking at him now, I'm kind of wondering why I didn't. No, I mean, he definitely.
I thought the same way about Badger.
Yeah.
I was kind of thinking, how could I? That's why this is so difficult.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned 23 years old, and the ETA says what, this year or next year?
It says 2021.
Okay. Well, that's one thing that jumps out to me is, I mean, other than his power. To me, what I'm looking at, his power has not quite reached potential, but in most of his other tools, he's just about, just about already at full maturity or close to it. So if that power develops the way that it's projected to, he could definitely be a very nice player. So my number three was another interesting little bit of a quick conversation beforehand, because when you look at international complex guys, there is kind of that difficulty of you don't have any statistics to play with and look at. But my number three is, pronunciation is your guess is as good as mine, but Jesus Milanez, Los Angeles Angels international complex. And I think he was the other guy for our scout who I mentioned, Randall. And at first base, I'm a victim of falling in love with the power a little bit. But Jesus Milanez had a 75 power projection tool for our scout. And the written scouting report on Milanez from our scout was really, really glowing about the kind of potential he has. So he looks like a potential big-time bat, just what the Angels need, right? But Jesus Milanez is my number three.
Well, I don't know how we're supposed to do this, but he
Is that spoiler alert?
Yeah, no, good. Well, why don't you just go ahead then, because we can always.
My number three, similar. He's in an international complex for the Nationals. My scout has his power pretty big. Same age as Milano's is Ernesto Garcia. Uh-huh. Is my number three. They are identical across the board almost for me. Same age, same everything. Supposed to get here in 2023. So they were sort of interchangeable. I have them at three and then two. They could have been backwards. But yeah, that was my number three.
Okay. Having a slight technical thing now, getting to my list. Okay, so my then we're at my number two, and if I can just okay, Greg Henderson of the Mets, and he was a guy that caught my eye. He is within the first couple of guys listed on the OSA list. And kind of an interesting, I mean, you look at, he did this past season get 130 at-bats at the big league level, and it wasn't a pretty picture. I mean, he hit 195, did get four homers, but, you know, didn't have instant success. However, if you look back previous to getting the big league call-up, he had already had 18 homers at the AAA level with a 289, 397, 500 line. And going back into, you know, 2019, he hit 32 homers over AA and AAA levels. So really, wherever he's been throughout his big league career, he's flashed that power. And he's got a, you know, I mentioned a 75 power projection on a couple of guys. I mean, our scout has him at 70 as his power projection with a 60 contact. And even, you know, an average kind of a 50 for his avoid Ks. I mean, which is nice to see as well, because, you know, a lot of your slugging first baseman will strike out quite a bit. It seems like, you know, he'll make enough contact to really allow that power to come out. So Greg Henderson is our number two, and he's also, by the way, a switch hitter. I have a thing for switch hitters.
That's one of the reasons Justin Smoke said on my team. The only thing that kept, by the way, Henderson off my list was just that I wasn't sure what to do with him because he did make it to the majors.
Yeah.
Still on the prospect list. He's 24. I think he'll definitely.
So we've made it to what? I think you're number one, right? And I think we may have a consensus.
Paulus?
Yeah.
He looks ready. And you said you had two guys that your scout had at 75 power. Mine has him at 80.
Oh, wow. So,
and he's sitting in AAA. What did he have, 28? Last year or total. And yeah, has he been in their organization the whole time? But anyway, yeah, Bob Hollis is my number one. Yours as well, I guess.
It looks like he has been with them, drafted fourth round. Drafted by the Blue Jays. Traded to the Yankees, and then the Yankees to the Mariners. So he was actually came over from the Yankees to the Mariners for another catcher, Hugh Brooks, and first baseman John Alexander. We also, and I thought that I had only seen the 275 power tool, but yeah, we've got him at 80 as well on the power projection. And yeah, Bob Hollis is our number one as well. A left-handed bat, kind of your big left-handed hitting first baseman, 24 years old. Now that power still has room to develop. Just sort of like I was just saying with with Henderson, the other tools seem just about ready to go in the big leagues, but the power is lacking behind a little bit. I mean, we've got him currently at 55 power tool, whereas, you know, 80 being the projection. So that's still a ways to go. And you always wonder, I mean, will the guy fully reach that? But yeah, there's a lot to like about, you know, last year, 28 homers over two different levels. And Bob Hollis is our consensus number one prospect in the SSG Out of the Park Baseball League. So
I just saw that I think the Mariners have Zimmerman, who's 36 years old at first. So
yeah, this is not. Oh, yeah, he could be right there on the verge. Okay, well, we did fail to, with Paul, I did fail to kind of go back and mention any significant snubs. And so that's why I wanted to do that at the beginning of this podcast. But and we did, I think we hit on Rizzo. Was there anyone else, I guess more on the big league side, was there anyone else that we should at least give some love to that maybe we didn't?
Well, there's a couple. I didn't know much about, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, Amaris Minier for the Twins, who is one of our switch hitters, like you said. I really liked him. Just guys I didn't know much about because they're in American League. Christian Walker, I liked. I think he's with the Orioles.
Orioles.
We mentioned Rizzo. Cody Bellinger was another one who I thought his numbers would be better than they ended up being when I just heard his name. But those are some guys I think that were just outside my list.
Yeah. Another guy I would throw in there, and it's fun. I mean, simulation baseball, and I've started to pay more attention to this with guys in my own organization. You don't always look at it because these players don't necessarily exist in 3D in your minds, but Clarence Bates of the Pirates, first baseman. Right. I hadn't really noticed this before, but he's a left-handed hitter, and this guy is 6'8", 265-pounder. So, I mean, he must just be a massive figure at the plate, and 32 bombs last year. Pretty imposing bat. And he's only 26 years old as well, so we talked about that a lot. I mean, seems to be a lot of like 25 through 27 year old first basemen that are just beasts in our league.
Yeah, I wish Bates played for the real Pirates. I think maybe each position has their different age. I'm not sure what you think. I'm so obsessed with keeping my team fairly young that I wonder what's the age for first baseman when they hit their prime. Like I think each position probably has their different age, and like maybe that's what it is, late 20s.
I kind of feel like hitters, especially your power hitters, that's the window, like that 25 to kind of 30 year old window is when you oftentimes see your best years. But that's just kind of me spitballing it. I don't know for sure. I don't have any statistics to back up that theory, but that's just sort of my observation, what it feels like. Now, that's real life baseball. Then you look at a league like ours. I don't know if it quite plays out that way, but so. Well, in order to just finish up, I thought maybe, let me see where we're at here. Okay, 54 minutes. So we're keeping these right around an hour each time. Maybe just as I talk with Paul, just any of your thoughts on kind of some of the remaining, a couple big names still out there in the free agent market. And I mean, not that you may not have any kind of feeling about where a certain guy might land or where he might fit, but I guess my general question is, are you surprised that some of the bats like Will Myers and Dickerson are still out there, Prince Fielder and I mean, Jock Peterson? What do you think is going to play out with the rest of this these free agents that are pretty big names.
I'm not surprised by Dickerson because yeah. I think people are afraid that outside Coors Field he won't produce like that, and these guys seem to want a lot of years.
Yeah,
which is a big turnoff. But I haven't been involved with too many free agents over my time in SSG late. Simmons was probably the latest anyone's ever signed. So I've never seen guys' numbers come down too much. I've never lowballed a guy in January or February to see what their reaction is. So just out of boredom, sometimes I'll look at guys and think, man, what if I just offered them this much money? But Will Myers, I forget which one of you, maybe both of you, hit it on the head. I think he'll stay. I see him still just staying in with the Angels.
Yeah.
I gotta believe if someone hasn't ponied up the cash for him by now, I think that number's gonna come down. Couple of good catchers out there, Luke Croy, Grandel. I mean, someone's got to need some of those. My guy Pedro Baez, I have toyed with offering him back. He's the ground ball closer. He had 45 saves. We don't really have a. I don't have your typical solid closer penciled in. So it's tempting. A lot of people are probably in the same boat as me right now. You're just tempted at this point, mid-January, with these guys left, to just throw an offer out there and see if they bite. But yeah, I'm a little surprised by Myers, Josh Peterson, people like that.
Yeah, that was one of the speculations. You know, was just kind of like, what will there be? Some of these guys that will take kind of that pillow deal. I mean, you see it in real baseball, but a year or 2 year at a higher value, that'll be interesting. And then, I mean, even Paul brought up the possibility of even guys, and I guess we have this rule in our league where at a certain date, I don't know if it's opening day. Go ahead.
Brought that up. I did not know that was a thing.
You don't have the compensation anymore after a certain date. Yeah.
You have to imagine these guys they're going to attract. I mean, you get your injury on opening day, you know, I wonder how some of these guys, I mean, in real life, it's hard for me to imagine. I know he brought up Kimbrel. It's just hard for me to imagine names like this, not if it, in real life signing yet. I'm trying to think right now. I know it's different with the pandemic and everything and just the strange season, but can you think of any names right now in real life that haven't signed that you're named as big as this? They just seem to have fleshed out.
No, I know Marcelo Ozuna is still on free agent, although, I mean, he had a pretty darn good year with Atlanta in that shortened season, although I don't know if you'd put him up, you know, the same as some of these guys we're talking about, but. I don't think there are too many big names. You're right.
I'm curious how much, I know you can't really see other people's budgets. I wonder how much money anyone really has left.
Well, that's another part of it. Cause you know, here and there in Discord, the guys who have been vocal, have mentioned, you know, a lot of different teams have mentioned. I mean, I know Damon, you're in Seattle, and you've talked about it. Tom with the Yankees, and there have been a few others who have. And I know the White Sox kind of had to tighten the belt a little bit, and they made some moves actually in order to cut some payroll. And yeah, you just wonder how many teams can even fully engage on these guys. And then what does end up happening if we get to opening day and some of these names are there. I mean, they just kind of sit in free agency, I suppose. It seems in a way a bit sad or a bit, you know, a bit odd and unjust that, but yeah, you wonder how the game will react if those guys will start accepting some, maybe 1 year somewhere in the range of 10 or 10 to 15 or something like that for 1 year. You just wonder if how that'll play out. So it'll be interesting.
You guys mentioned before we go here, I was surprised. I was wondering where Jose Iglesias was going to go.
Oh, yeah.
I only had two targets in the offseason. I really wanted a good defensive shortstop. I was happy with Simmons. The thing about Iglesias is just turned me off. Not just the offense, but he's the leader. Just, he's got that low.
Yeah.
I really didn't want to spend money. I mean, but boy, that defense is incredible. I only had two targets in the offseason. I was surprised that everybody just seems to come to our division, but he's with the Dodgers now.
Well, let's see if we can get a scoop out of you. I don't know if you want to talk about this, but I was curious from my point of view as a rival. What are the plans now with Profar? You move him to third, or
I still messing with it. The DH will really help. I really like Forrest Wall. As we've always talked, his defense is just not. We're 14th in the league in defense, and it's hard. It's really hard to see where the hole in the dike is.
Yeah. Well, Simmons should help that.
Profar's defense is amazing, and he's a great second baseman. So up the middle, that'd be great. But as you alluded to with Paul, I'm tempted to put him at third also. Ernie Jones is finally coming up from AAA, and he's had a good bat, but his defense is very average. So the DH will allow me, I think. I could see, it's really weird to have a DH be a second baseman, but I could see Forrest Wall.
Yeah.
Right-handers not being in the field. We have a kid, Pedro Gonzalez, not a very big bat, but he's another. I could be really nice to field, have an infield with those three.
Yeah.
How much offense do you want to give up? Even on the course field. So, yeah, it's something I probably won't decide.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean, though, because we're probably looking at, right now, I'd say our primary DH may very well be Trey Turner, which is kind of another like oddity you wouldn't expect, but there isn't really another place where he fits defensively over a guy I'm already planning to play. So it's just sort of, but you still like him in your lineup. So by default, he kind of the relief. This will be our last little statement I'll make, and then if you have any reaction, but we just in the free agents, there's a lot of. And I talked about this in the first episode. I mean, just a lot of one-year deals going out there to relievers, and there's still some good ones left. I mean, Quackenbush, Mike Moran is still out there after he was, you know, that kind of deal where he was released back into free agency. He's still out there. Marmol at 38 years old, but he had a great year last year. Just looking down, I mean, Jenry Mejia, there's still pretty darn nice list of relievers. And I mean, obviously Betances is another name I'm seeing. So obviously everybody could always use another good seventh and eighth inning arm. It'd be interesting to see, you know, where these guys all end up.
Yeah. They all have to go somewhere, right?
Well, you mentioned Baez too, huh?
I think maybe everybody's in the same situation. I have money I could spend, but
yeah.
I'm really balanced looking ahead at the next year. So it's really, really tempting when you get bored in the winter to make a move. But I really would just like to balance the whole budget for the next year. So.
Well, Phil, very much appreciate your time. So. It's always a pleasure. It's always a good time to talk it over with you. And so for those of you guys in the league that hopefully everybody's getting a chance to listen to these, we're recording on a Sunday. When you guys will hear it, it'll probably be not till Tuesday, but I'll continue to go around the horn with future episodes. We'll probably just kind of go second base, third base, shortstop, and then head to the outfield. And then there's, of course, still starting pitchers and bullpen. So more positional rating podcasts to come, and we'll follow this format unless certainly open to any to your feedback. If anyone has some suggestions for maybe a different way to approach these. Thanks for listening, and Phil, thanks for your time. It's getting there. Yeah, it's about 6:15 over here. So, all right. Well, thanks for listening, guys. And until next time, this is SSG Today, Long Gone Podcast. And next will be episode 4, and we'll look at the second baseman. Thanks a lot.